today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by Connor Sports. Connor Sports is the world leader in sports services, the official floor of the Final Four and the Olympics. They do everything from NBA floors all the way to rec centers. Visit connorsports.com for more information. Also, if you're not already a member and are interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit risingcoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that don't get posted anywhere else. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com. All right, today's special guest, all the way from UNC Charlotte, assistant coach Vic Sfera. Coach, how are you doing today?
Hey, Brian, doing well, man. How are you?
I am very fortunate, excited to talk with you today, and I really appreciate your time. I know you got a lot of things going on as you dive into the summer. But, you know, talk to us a little bit about your journey as a college basketball coach, how you got in the profession. And I know you played some JUCO ball back in the day. So we got to talk about that a little bit. But
I did.
Tell us your story and how you got into coaching and got on at UNC Charlotte.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of twists and turns, so I don't know how much time you got. But I got a late start playing organized basketball. I always played it just to, you know, escape from some you know, real life issues and stuff like that going on during my childhood. I just played it in the park and just loved it. So I always had a passion and a love for it, but just got a late start with the organized ball part. And so basically when I got to my senior year of high school, I wasn't ready for it to be over. My itch was still going, and I wanted to keep it going as long as I could. So I found a junior college that would take me, and I just wanted to kind of extend my playing career as much as possible. And after that season, I had the chance to potentially keep going and play Division III ball, and we all know how costly that can be. But during that time, I was actually fortunate. I had started meeting some coaches that were like really pouring into me and kind of you know, just really showing me what it means to be a coach. And so I got bit by that coaching bug young, and I was encouraged to kind of start looking at, you know, maybe a student assistant route at the NAI level, small college level. And so I ended up at Biola University in Southern California, NAI school. The head coach that I worked for at the time, Dave Holmquist, is still there. He's a Hall of Fame head coach, and I was very fortunate to kind of get my start that way, because I didn't realize how fortunate I was until later on in this thing, but I was able to do so much. I mean, we had one head coach, one full-time assistant, and then I was eager to do whatever. So they had me doing video. They had me help recruit. I literally could kind of make it whatever I wanted it to be. So I was very passionate, very eager, and you know, I ended up learning a lot and really operating like a full-time assistant while I was still in college. So yeah, that was a huge step for me.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I tell young people all the time that are trying to get into the profession that regardless of level, if you're a coach, you're a coach. And it doesn't really matter where you start or where you are at. If you're getting that coaching and recruiting experience, sometimes it's better at those lower levels because you're able to dive right in and be able to get reps just like a player. And like you said, you can kind of make it what you want it. And that's kind of a pitch, especially at the junior college level when we don't have a lot of money necessarily to try and get some guys to either come work for me or work with me in some capacity is, hey, if you want to coach, you got to go coach. And I think that's great that you got that experience and kind of went from there. Talk to us a little bit about your Division I journey. So starting at Memphis and then, you know, how you – I think you've had quite a few stops along the way, mostly on the East Coast. And I think we met maybe a decade ago, maybe longer, and when you were at Virginia in the video room back in the day, we were probably exchanging some VHS or DVD back then.
Yep. No, so to get my foot in the door at the Division I level, actually while I was at the NAI school at Biola University in California, where I'm from, I would work camps. And that was a huge part of my journey, was working camps. And I can still, you know, think of camps that I worked throughout the summer times, and I still have relationships from people that I met at those camps. But that was really my foot in the door. So Josh Pastner was an assistant coach at the University of Arizona, and I would work camps at Arizona every summer. So then when he ended up at Memphis as an assistant to Coach Calipari, we stayed in touch, and Josh did a great job of making everybody feel like, you know, you were his best friend. And so then when he finally got Coach Cal went to Kentucky and he finally ended up as the head coach at Memphis, I still had a year to go in my undergrad. And I pestered him and just asked him if, you know, I kind of saw it as my opportunity to get my foot in the door at that level. And I just wanted to transfer all my credits over and just do whatever I could do. And so I pestered him enough and one of his guys enough that they finally let me, you know, join them. And 5 days later, I left California, and I never lived in California again. So I drove out to Memphis, and that was the start of my Division I journey. And it was a huge, shock to the system after being at an NAI school for so long. And this is Memphis coming off a Final Four and all that good stuff. And obviously a young head coach taking over and filling in the shoes of somebody, you know, that had been, you know, done things that had never been done there before. So that was a huge eye opener for me. From there, I ended up going to the University of Virginia with Coach Bennett. That was going into his second year as a head coach there. So it's not the Virginia that it is today. We were kind of at the bottom of the ACC looking up, trying to figure out how to compete with Duke and Carolina and all these, you know, schools at the top of the league, and just trying to scratch and claw our way to the top. So I was there for 2 years, started out as a volunteer. So I actually turned down a grad assistant position at Memphis to go volunteer at Virginia. And it ended up turning into kind of a, I guess, part-time job, video job at Virginia. Was there for 2 years and actually was really lucky. Got my first full-time assistant job at Northern Arizona University with Jack Murphy after that. And Jack was an assistant at Memphis for Pastner. So we had worked together before. And so I think at 22, 23 years old, I was a full-time Division I assistant coach, which was kind of something I had been striving for. And, that was definitely a part of my path.
And then from Northern Arizona, you went to Liberty, correct?
I actually went back to Virginia. So I had two stints at Virginia. So now Virginia had seen some success. I think they won the ACC one time. So I went back to Virginia to kind of experience some of the fruit of our labor from those early years. So was there for 2 years. And my role kind of kept increasing, especially leaving to be an assistant and coming back, kind of already started with that trust built in. And so was able to kind of do more and more. And then, ended up at Liberty University with Richie McKay, was there for 2 years before coming here to Charlotte with Ron Sanchez.
Gotcha. So yeah. from a perspective of guys you've worked for, you know, other than Pastner, you know, someone that you kind of, what you said, begged or, you know, did everything you could to get on in some capacity. And even that was in a volunteer or student manager type position. Student assistant. A lot of the guys that you've worked for since are all in your family tree. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, what it is that you did specifically to build those relationships or those conversations that you have, because a lot of times young guys, hey, they may know they're one of their assistants may get a job, and it's kind of like a weird, you know, hey, are you going to bring me with you if you get one? Am I going to get promoted within? Talk about some of those conversations, or was it just your work? You know, was it just your character? Was it just your work? Is it just the trust? You know, how does one stay on with or move on within the family? In those conversations?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to go about it. So I'm not saying that my way is the way for everybody, but I honestly never had those conversations once the job was filled, once they took the job. Sometimes, you know, maybe just in passing, or if I was helping a coach, you know, drive their recruiting trip, and you know, these things would kind of come up naturally, like during the course of your time there. And you know, we'd talk about, you know, kind of goals and things like that, and obviously let them know that that's something that I'd be interested in. But when that day came and they got the job or they were in the mix for a job, never once did I have to say, hey, I would love to come with you, like what do I have to do to get on board or anything like that. And that's something I am proud of, not to pat myself on the back, but Jack Murphy was an assistant at Memphis. He gets the job at NAU. I go with him, you know, there. Richie McKay from Virginia going to Liberty, same thing. Ron Sanchez from Virginia to Charlotte, same thing. So it's something that I really value, is having a strong tree. And I've kind of had those two trees of the Memphis tree or Pastner tree and Coach Bennett's tree. And I think it's something that I try to encourage young guys all the time. It's like, find a tree. They will take care of you. You know, you got to do the job. You got to do a great job where you're at and kind of grow where you're planted, so to speak. But I'm a firm believer. You can't do it on your own, especially as a guy that, you know, maybe comes up as a manager or you don't have this pedigree behind you. You got to have the help of others.
That's a great point. What would you say on the flip side of that to someone that potentially their tree is almost non-existent, or, you know, maybe it's a retirement. Maybe there's not a lot of coaches that worked under who you worked with that got head coaching jobs or assistant jobs, and to try and get involved. What would you advise someone on that capacity?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think just find somebody that you believe in. And find somebody that you see kind of the world similarly and kind of coaching similarly and have a similar philosophy to. Just find people that you can do life with. I mean, when I turned down a paying job at Memphis to go to work for free at Virginia, I knew Coach Bennett was a really good coach. What he had done at Washington State was really, really impressive. But nobody looked at Tony Bennett back then, you know, in the same way that they do now, that he's won national championships and has turned that program around. You know, like, I really went there because I believed in his vision of the program and I believed in the type of coach he was. And it was similar to the way that I would want to run a program potentially one day. So I'd say find somebody that you believe in and just go all in on that.
Good advice. Good advice there. Talk a little bit about how, you know, what it's been like at Charlotte. So you've been at the high major level, Memphis, Virginia, and then, you know, what you would consider maybe a low major at Northern Arizona, and Liberty and Charlotte are, you know, similar in different capacities, but different at the same time, you know, with Liberty kind of climbing and being a private school. Talk a little bit about some of your experiences at the place that you're at now at Charlotte.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's a really good, it's a tough league, Conference USA, and we're actually going to the American Conference in a year or two from now. But so really high level basketball. And that's something that from a career standpoint that I'm also kind of proud to say is, you know, I've played at the junior college level. I helped coach at the high school level during that time too, was at the NAI level. And like you said, low major, mid major, high major. So from a career standpoint, I realized there's good basketball everywhere and you can have a good career anywhere. So a lot of times, you know, I think the coaches get on kids about like D1 or bust. And, you know, you always see people say like, hey, kids, don't limit yourself and blah, blah. But a lot of times coaches do that too, you know. And I think we need to take our own advice there. Like there's good basketball to be played anywhere. But here at Charlotte, I mean, I love my job and I love my job because of who I'm with. Again, that kind of family tree, so to speak. And this is something that Coach Sanchez and I have talked about for a long time. And to see it kind of from the very beginning, like from the thought of it being a potential job to it coming on, you know, true, to kind of helping put a staff together, to kind of really shaping what this program could look like. It's just been fun to be a part of all those stages.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I think that's a very humble thing to say, that we don't always, we lose track of why we're actually coaching, and you get stuck in the level or what it looks like to the outside. And, you know, you're a testament to, hey, doing all those different things, but at the same time, you remain very humble. And I know that the word humility is huge, especially for one of your former bosses that, you know, with Coach Bennett. Talk a little bit about that word and how it's kind of guided you through this, or how it was, you know, emphasized in the Virginia program and in that family tree.
Yeah, we said the definition of humility is knowing who you are. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, it's knowing who you are. We also say sober judgment, you know, not thinking too high, but also not thinking too low, having sober judgment of your worth, who you are, you know, that you have tremendous value, you know, like, so it's not just, you know, putting yourself down all the time. And it's just thinking of yourself less and putting others first. And I know that's really hard to do in a you know, profession sometimes that, you know, seems to reward people that kind of put themselves out there or self-promote or, oh, I got to do this to keep up, you know, like just really, can you think of yourself less and maybe serve others more? and will you see the fruit of that? Maybe you will, maybe you won't, but that's kind of the way I look at humility.
Are there any other words that you would feel? You've talked a lot about alignment, and you've talked about the, you know, working with and for good people, and that makes everything a lot better and smoother. What are some other values, if you had your own program, from a core value perspective of what that would look like, or things that you've learned through the people that you've worked with?
Yeah, you know, they say the best coaches are the best thieves and stealers. Our five pillars, it's hard for me to stray away from it. It's humility, passion, unity, servanthood, and thankfulness. And we really talk about being a countercultural program. And each one of those terms is very countercultural, kind of like what we just talked about with humility. I'll say the world is telling people, hey, you got to promote yourself. You got to be cool. You know, you got to be the guy. And we're saying, no, like you got to think of yourself less, you know, or passion. Like, hey, passion for us is don't be lukewarm. You know, don't be in the middle. Either be hot or cold. You know, like chase after your dreams with a vigor and a passion. Whereas the world wants you to be like, this comes easy to me. You know, like this is, I'm just a natural, you know. Unity. I mean, do you, right? There's a phrase for the opposite of unity, just do you, where we say, no, you cannot do it by yourself. You can't do it alone. Servanthood, and Coach Sanchez does a great job of embodying this, but he says the greatest platform among us, or the, you know, for him as the head coach, or for our best player, like he challenges himself, he challenges our best players to be the biggest servants of them all, and really just putting other people first and leading, you know, from a servant's mindset and from a servant's heart. Humility, passion, servant, unity, and then thankfulness. You know, the world will tell you to be thankful when things are good, but nobody's talking about thankfulness when things are you know, going hard and during rough times. And we encourage our guys and our staff members, you know, to be thankful for the hard times, because we all know, you know, people that have gone through some life know that your greatest lessons are learned during the hard times. So those are really all countercultural things, and, you know, things that if I were lucky enough to get my own program one day, which is really actually not much of a goal of mine, to be honest, I would preach kind of the same things to my players and staff.
All right. With you saying those core values, and it came so naturally for you, and you talked a lot about those, how you resonated and gave great examples. Give us an example maybe of a lesson that may have taken you the longest to learn.
Yeah, I think my mind instantly goes to when I got my first assistant job at this level. I think I was a 22, going on 23-year-old full-time assistant coach at the Division I level, which for me at that time was a huge milestone or accomplishment. I had been so set on you know, kind of climbing the ladder as quickly as I could and reaching that position and that title. And I was pretty goal driven at that point. I've kind of changed a little bit since then. But then I got there and I enjoyed it. And I love Coach Murph. We have a great relationship to this day. But when you get there, you're like, all right, now what? You know, now I got to start something else and kind of climb again and try to get another title to make myself feel good. You know, like, and I think really that lesson of, I was so eager to climb the ladder that I failed to realize what actually mattered. And there was a quote I saw later that kind of resonated with what I was going through at that time. It's, and I'll butcher the quote a little bit, but the gist of it is, we spend so much time climbing the ladder that we fail to realize that it's actually leaning against the wrong building. You know, we get to the top of that ladder and we realize all along I was climbing the wrong ladder. And for me, that was a very important lesson to learn. And I think something for young coaches that are kind of trying to get their foot in the door at this level, I think it's something really important to remember.
Yeah, that's very powerful. So dive in deeper. Can I challenge you to dive in deeper to that? What you mean exactly? So you reached a pinnacle that a lot of us are trying to maybe reach in this profession of, hey, I want to be a D1 assistant. I want to be a D1 assistant. You know, even myself, I'm 35 and I still haven't been a Division I assistant. And you right. did that at a very young age in your early 20s. Talk to us about what that really means. Dive in deeper.
It's fleeting. Titles are fleeting. A role or a goal of yours can be fleeting if it's not really rooted in something of substance. And I'll be honest with you, I learned this, and I haven't shared this with a ton of people, but I'll give it to you. I learned this a really hard way. In my second year at NAU, I was on a recruiting trip, and I was in a really bad car accident. And I was very fortunate to really not have gone through like a lot of injuries after that. It could have been a whole lot worse. But that lesson really slapped me in the face after that accident. Because here I was, like, really, I felt like kind of running myself into the ground. I think it was an accident of exhaustion and fatigue. And I was running myself into the ground. I'm like, for what? Like, it's really important to work hard. You have to. And I like to say by nature, I kind of am wired that way. But there is a line that can be crossed, and it could be dangerous if you do cross it. And you really got to ask yourself, why am I even pushing myself to that point? Is it just for the approval of people? Is it for getting that title, that shiny title, and that business card? And what does that really mean once you get it?
Again, another humbling experience, but at the same time, like, it taught you a lesson, like you said, you know, that, hey, am I overworking? Did I push myself to a point where you weren't being present in the modern day of what's actually happening and what you value is what's really important? And
yeah,
we lose that in our profession. And I think that's very pure. It's very mature. It's very humbling. It's a lot of things that we emphasize in our business. Work, 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 be the first one there, last one to leave. And there's a time and place for that. But there's also a time and place for family and making sure that your health is a priority. You don't put your health on the shelf, that you're taking care of yourself. Because if you don't fill your tank every day, literally, you'll have nothing to give back. Again, attaching a story to it hits a little bit more at home than us just sitting here talking about it when you actually lived it.
Well, I'm thankful for the hard times, right? Like, I just talked about that with our pillar. Like, that experience was a really hard time for me. But I learned a lesson that I might not have been able to learn any other way. And to be honest, that experience is probably what led me to going back to Virginia in a support role. So I left an assistant job, which is, I mean, again, and I had to answer a lot of questions, and friends in the business were asking me, and frankly, I didn't care anymore. You know, like, I didn't care about the perception of what it would look like to go back to where I came from. You know, like, for me, I knew it was the right move. You know, 2 years into my marriage, she had been making a lot of sacrifices. We had not been spending a lot of time together. And I just knew it was the right move for me and my family at that time. But that was a big step for me to go back to kind of a quote unquote, you know, family and coaching tree. And since that move, I have not left that Virginia tree.
Yeah, it's special. Yeah. And it's awesome when, like, your kind of behaviors come before your success. You bet on yourself and don't care what other people think in this profession. Is often very hard with social media, with the perception, you know, oh, why did he leave that job? Yeah. A lot of people question, but if they don't know the whole story, it's every journey. It's your own. You're literally running your own race. And I think that's something that's hard to do. That's really hard to do. So hats off to you on that. You've been really good with these life lessons. So I'm going to keep hitting you with them. What's one thing that you believe in that others may think is weird?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm not much of a goals person anymore. Josh Metcalf book, Burn Your Goals, has kind of scarred me. because I think I've taken it to an extreme. But I was, prior to that experience that I was talking about, I was very much a goals person. It's like, man, this is my short-term goal, long-term goal. These are the things I'm going to get there. I am much more a believer right now in just taking it a day at a time and just trying to do the best that I can do. And really, you kind of touched on it, being present and being in the moment and just trusting that things will take care of themselves if I do the best I can with what I have right now.
Easier said than done at times, but again, I think our goals should be goal is just be present every day. Like if you can continue to be present, it's going to open up a lot more doors, windows, whatever you want to crawl through to get us to where you want to be and continue to just grind towards being the best person, coach, husband, father, whatever it is that your roles are physically possible.
Yeah. And you kind of talk about he made bracelets for his players. And it was like super simple, but his bracelets that he made for his players 1 year, it just said, be here now. I'm like, how simple is that? But if we could really like put that to practice, you know, we'd all be so much better off. And again, hard to do with distractions and social media and all that stuff. But if we could just be here now, I think we'd be better off.
Yeah. We just emphasize the wrong things, you know, in our society, even like you even said it yourself, our profession is overemphasizing value, hard work. Our society says, hey, look at me, look at me. That's the opposite. Like you said, it's all the polar opposites, or I forget the terminology, the counterculture. Like you said the word counterculture. It's literally everything that our society thinks is important is actually what we should be trying to get away from. And even though that's different, it's also it's how you perceive it too, what you're trying to do, what you're trying to work towards. If you were to give advice, you've talked a little bit about some of your journeys and different things. So from, you know, it's a Rising Coaches podcast. So young coaches, as they get in, you've given a lot of life advice, give a little, maybe some basketball perspective, or, you know, maybe talk about something that I haven't asked that you may find prevalent in the basketball world or in this industry.
Yeah. I'd say for young guys coming up, or I think back to like myself when I was at, you know, the high school level or NAI level, when I was just like trying to meet people and just figure out, can I create a career in this thing? I think, you know, everybody will talk about networking, and I'm sure you guys touch on this stuff a lot, but I just think you can't beat FaceTime, you know, and I'm not talking about the actual, you know, iPhone FaceTime, but you can't beat, you know, in-person direct contact and relationship. Go work camps. I mean, camps were such a big part of my journey and my path into making this a career. And like I said, I kind of touched on those relationships that I met through there. Go to clinics, go to people's practices, observe practices. Like the more in-person networking and just real life relationships you can do is so much better than just, you know, throwing out a bunch of calls or throwing out a bunch of emails or a bunch of texts or whatever, like, and then always follow up, you know, work camps, go to people's coaches' clinics, go to people's practices, and then always follow up. And I think that's really how to kind of get your foot in the door into real genuine relationships. And then as those relationships, you know, grow a little deeper, just try to find ways to, you know, be a giver and not a taker. And, you know, instead of immediately asking for, hey, do you know if there's any GA jobs, over the course of time, like, hey, I saw this kid. Do you know about this kid? You know, just maybe a lead here, a lead there. Like those are the guys that like, now I'm like, okay, if we do have a GA job, I'll remember that guy, you know? But just find ways to be authentic, to do networking that in a way that fits who you are. But I think that FaceTime is huge. So just get out there.
I agree with you wholeheartedly with that. And I would say even mine and your relationship over the last, you know, decade has kind of had that as kind of like a connector, you know, try to be quote unquote helpful, you know, whether it's my kid, someone in our league, region, any of those things. A lot of our conversations may be a little bit transactional in that standpoint of, hey, have you, this guy, what's he about? Is he fit with who we are? Or we're looking for X, Y, Z. And then on the flip side, like you've sent me names and different things too. And I think that's a way to continue to build trust, build a relationship with people. in any capacity, because we all need players or all want to know information, because that's all gold for us as we build rosters and we get to know people in our profession.
Absolutely.
All right. You've done a phenomenal job. I will say, you know, especially with the character standpoint and the values, and there's some really good leadership lessons that anyone can take from this, not only coaches, but in people in general. And you mentioned earlier, and not that I found it unique, but you know, you haven't mentioned that, hey, a desired outcome is to be a head coach. What is the best thing that can happen in your life right now? In, you know, in general, maybe we'll just throw it out there as a blanket statement of what is the best thing that can happen to you right now?
To live in the moment and to be here now. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know where my career is going to take me. I'm truly like, and it's not easy for me because I am kind of a type A planner, kind of to do guy. So this is a step out in faith for me. Over the last few years, I've really been like, I have to just, to use a phrase from Coach Ben that he uses a lot, I have to hold things with open hands or hold things loosely instead of clenched fists, trying to control everything. That's part of my career. I'm just going to hold it loosely. I'm trying to do I'm trying to do the best job I could do for Charlotte, try to make my boss look good. Because he's somebody that I've done life with for a long time. He's a friend, not just a boss. And I'm just trying to figure out how to make this thing the best that we can make it. And what that'll do for my career, I don't know. And I'm okay, honestly. And if it doesn't work out, I'm okay there too.
Very unique perspective, but I like it a lot. And I think just like you said, that presence of, if we were to give advice to anybody listening, hey, be present, stay where your feet are. Don't worry about the future. Just, you know, you can't dictate the past or the future, you know, just be present, and you can't change a lot of things and you can't control it. And I really like your perspective of the clenched fist versus holding loose, because we all do want to control a lot.
Oh, no doubt. Coaches are great at control. Coaches are great at control. We want to control everything, you know? But and it's not easy. I don't sit here, and last thing I want for out of this thing is to make it seem like, oh man, holier than thou, or like I've got it all figured out. I don't. I definitely don't have it figured out. But this is a work in progress for me. And I didn't. When you asked me to be honest, I almost didn't want to do it, because it's not like, all right, again, I'm not trying to build a brand. I'm not trying to be a head coach. I'm not trying to get a better assistant coaching job. I'm content where I'm at. I'm content with the people that I'm with. But I did want to share parts of my journey in case it could help somebody that was a young me from 15, 16 years ago. I'm so hard-headed. I probably still needed a car accident to freaking get myself in shape, you know, and give me clear perspective. But if somebody can take this, you know, journey and kind of, you know, tidbits from my life and use it to help them, that's the goal.
Yeah, just keep living that life that you, in essence, would want, you know, recorded, replicated, repeated. And I think it's all humbling for us to listen to, regardless of what the reason is why you are what you are. Like, I don't think that whole perspective is that important, or there's no necessary outcome. But if you just live the life that you think is best, and you're present and you're doing that, I think that impact is greater than anything that could get on here and just stand on a pedestal and try and look at me or build your brand. Like you said, I think all of that wholeheartedly is what this profession is and should be about. It just doesn't always end up that way. And, right, you know, sometimes it deviates, you know, it's a great profession, but a terrible business. And, you know, you speaking on that, that there is, you know, there is some people that still have some purity to them that are about the right things, that aren't all outcome based in our profession. And it's refreshing to hear. And I'm glad you were able to share your words and your leadership traits and your core values with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Take care.
Have a good one.